You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a mysterious development in Eureka, possible enrollment declines at Southern Oregon University, and more drama at a local Rogue Valley Fire District. I'm Eric Newman, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Roma Vitalia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm James Kelly, JPR's news intern for the summer.
James, we're going to start with you. You covered some news this week about a possible smaller-than-expected enrollment class at Southern Oregon University. What's the news there?
That's right, Eric. So on Tuesday, SOU President Rick Bailey, he sent out a statement to the SOU community, and that statement basically said that the university is expecting a smaller freshman class than usual, and that the school's budget will take a hit. He said that if current projections hold, then that's probably going to look like a $2.7 million reduction to the school's budget. They're also estimating about a 6% drop in overall student credit hours.
And so what did President Bailey blame these enrollment numbers on?
Well, he's pretty adamant that it's not a reflection of the university's recruitment or enrollment teams or the work that they've been trying to do to bring in more students. He actually says they've been working really hard and basically have prevented the school from ending up in a much worse scenario. But what he does blame the enrollment numbers on is this year's FAFSA, which was released 3 months later than usual in December, not October, when it usually comes out or has come out in years past. He says the rollout this year was late and confusing. And this also, of course, affects the number of transfer students applying to SOU. So that contributes to the drop in enrollments as well. And Bailey also spends a paragraph saying SOU is really not the only school facing this type of scenario, because more students are deferring than before or just not going to college.
So how does this new forecast fit in with sort of longer-term financial struggles at SOU and that other colleges in the region have been facing?
You know, since the pandemic, student enrollment numbers have really taken a hit at colleges and universities across the country and the state. But fortunately, enrollment is growing at a lot of schools back up. We're talking a few more percentage points each year, but not hitting pre-pandemic levels. So most places are still struggling with getting that sort of enrollment they're used to having before the pandemic. And so they're finding new ways to make up their budget deficits. And that's relying less on tuition and state funds. Back in 2023, SOU redesigned its budget and spending habits because it was facing a $5 million deficit at the time. The plan proposed cutting 82 jobs, which was roughly 13% of university staff. Although it's worth mentioning that they only let go of about 24 people, and the rest of those jobs were positions that were open at the time. And so they cut about 82 jobs, full-time jobs, as in whole. And really, this was the bulk of the plan. They began looking for opportunities. They might be able to properties they might be able to sell. So fast forward, and Bailey said in the statement they are now planning to move forward with putting some of those properties for sale. Those funds, if they do end up selling some of those properties, will help right the ship. Although it's important to note that these really are sort of a one-time safety net, so the school is weighing whether to use them now or to wait.
Okay, and so these are forecast enrollment numbers at SOU. It's not necessarily final. When will there be more definitive information about the number of students coming into the university?
Well, Bailey said in the statement that it will be about another month or so before those enrollment numbers are really solidified, and said he would discuss the issues further at SOU's Welcome Breakfast in September.
Okay, thanks, James. Jane, we're going to turn to you now. You've been covering an ongoing story at Jackson County Fire District 5 in the Rogue Valley. What was the news this week?
So at Tuesday night's board of directors meeting, there was some big news about financial issues that the district is facing. The staff said that the district could run out of money as soon as November. They're facing a potential shortfall of up to $3 million. In May, the district had to take out a line of credit just to be able to pay its staff for the year. According to the meeting materials, they couldn't meet payroll. The interim fire chief, Aaron Bussard, has said that staffing costs alone are using up 110% of the district's revenues. And so the district talked on Tuesday night at the board meeting. The board members were talking about ways to address this issue. So they've already canceled all their overtime. They've reduced some benefits. They're seeking out more volunteer firefighters, and they're going to sell off some of their equipment as well. And there are some other things that they're looking at, too.
Wow. So just to back up a little bit, what is Jackson County Fire District 5 and how did all this come about?
So the fire district has three fire stations in Phoenix, Talent, and unincorporated Ashland. They serve just over 23,000 people. In terms of how this happened, it's a little bit complicated and some of it is still yet to be determined. But according to the meeting materials, the district underbudgeted some of its line items and overforecasted its projected tax revenue. And the tax revenue provides the vast majority of the district's funding. It's interesting, there's been a lot of news coming out of the district recently. So last week, the board of directors fired the former chief, whose name was Charles Hanley. The reasons that he were fired were not financial. The three claims that were made against him were found to be sustained by an independent investigator, and those were covering up sexual harassment, bullying, and interfering with a governmental promotion board. So he had been on paid administrative leave since May and was fired last week. But I will note that the fire chief does oversee the district's budget, and when the district's office manager and finance officer retired a few years ago, the chief did not replace them, and so that financial role was basically filled by the chief. And then, as I said, there's been some other turmoil in the district recently. There were complaints back in February from the union asking the board to take action because there were repeated complaints about inappropriate conduct in the department. The union said that behavior has been going on for years. There was a toxic culture of bullying and harassment. And then in March, three out of the five board members suddenly resigned. They had to appoint new board members. So there's a lot going on. There's stuff that we're still following that hasn't really been determined yet. One of the new directors, the board members, John Carnes, said this week that the finances were astonishing, and it was even more astonishing that they're getting by the board, who is absolutely asleep at the wheel. So that's what John Carnes said this week. So the current board of directors is saying that it's going to continue to investigate how the financial situation became so dire. The board chair, Greg Costanzo, was saying that they're working on a lot of different inquiries to figure out how the money was spent, where it was spent, and where the money's gone.
Wow, pretty dramatic. So what might all of this mean for residents here in the Rogue Valley?
Yeah, so I mean, if it's the financial problem means that there's fewer staff for the district and therefore less ability for the district to respond to calls. So we know there are going to be some layoffs coming up in February of 12 firefighters because their positions are funded by federal grants and that grant is going to run out and it doesn't seem the board will have the money to continue to pay them. But I talked to the interim fire chief, Aaron Bustard, who is saying that residents shouldn't panic, and there were some residents at the meeting on Tuesday who spoke during public comment who were concerned. But Bustard pointed out that the region also received support from other agencies and partnerships, so including the City of Medford, City of Ashland, and Fire District 3. So he's saying that those other agencies would be able to respond to calls, hopefully through partnerships. And so it's not quite time to panic, but the board is going to continue to try to address this budget shortfall and figure out what happened.
Okay. Thanks, Jane.
Sure.
Roman, we're going to turn to you now. So this week you covered a somewhat complicated story about a mystery developer in Eureka and a land swap that fell apart this week. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, it is pretty complicated. What we learned just last week was that this developer that was going to essentially purchase some land from the Eureka School District backed out of the deal. That's after the school district let the deal lapse on Friday. They declined to extend the deadline any further. They had extended it a couple of times. It was originally approved back in December. So the school district was trying to sell off this surplus property. It was this Jacobs Junior High School property that's no longer in use. It hasn't been in use for a while. And so they've been trying to find someone to take it over. They've been in negotiations with a few buyers. One of them was the California Highway Patrol, who wanted to build their headquarters or one of their headquarters here, and also the city of Eureka, which had pulled out. They were also competing against the California Highway Patrol. It seemed like the school district was going to go with the CHP deal, but at the last minute, back in December, the school district instead signed a deal with this mysterious company. They're called AMG Communities Jacobs LLC. And this deal was also just really weird in and of itself. It was structured like a land swap, but it really just looked like a land sale. So AMG gave away these two small residential units to the school district. And then on top of that, they also gave them $5.3 million in cash. So This deal in total was $6 million, so most of it was a cash deal anyways. So no one really knows who this developer is and, you know, who they represent. But the North Coast Journal, they did a public records request that did reveal some ties to this local developer named Robin Arkley. He's been recently fighting with the city over these downtown parking lots. He really wants to keep these parking lots. He says that they're needed for, you know, local businesses and doesn't want them developed on. The city has been looking into redeveloping them and turning them into affordable housing. So he's been this big major financial backer of this ballot measure up in November that would ban redevelopment of these parking lots. So the company, seemingly AMG, has wanted to develop this empty lot into a mix of like higher density residential and commercial space that might also appeal to the city and have them not develop on these parking lots.
So you did speak to the Eureka City manager about all this. What did they say about it?
Yeah, he said he wasn't really surprised that this deal never got finalized and was never finished. He called it all a political stunt. He even said that what AMG did was disgusting and that they dragged the school board into this political fight. So in a statement after the deal had died on Friday, AMG then claimed that it was all the city's fault for this, that, you know, the city staff, including the city manager and city council members, were anti-housing and they didn't want to build more housing and they're preventing AMG from doing this. But, you know, the city manager I talked to, Miles Slattery, he just, you know, he flat out denied all of this. He said, if anything, that Eureka is one of the more pro-housing cities in California. So what's interesting, and I looked this up, is, you know, this month the city actually got this $630,000 grant from the state for homelessness services. And what's specific about that is that grant is only given out to cities or counties with this so-called pro-housing designation, which means that they have an effort to improve and build housing. And there's around 50 of those in the state. So it really is kind of like the state saying that Eureka is a pro-housing city. They also said that, you know, the city's been bending over backwards to try and help AMG with all of this, but they haven't been responsive and, you know, they wouldn't talk to the city.
So now that this land deal has fallen apart, what happens next? The property owned by Eureka City Schools is still for sale. Do they have another buyer?
Yeah, we don't really know what the city plans to do with the property. It's assumed they're going to try and sell it again. You know, the California Highway Patrol might be interested, still interested in the property. AMG had said in their statement they're waiting until the passage of this ballot measure, which would also rezone this property for residential use, despite that being something the city could do without a ballot measure. So if that ballot measure passes, they have said they might still be interested in buying it. So we'll kind of see what happens in a future school board meeting.
Okay. Thanks, Roman.
Thanks.
Justin, we're going to turn to you now for an update on a wildfire that's burning near the community of Orleans, California. It's called the Boise Fire. What's the latest information about this wildfire?
Yeah, so this fire started on August 9th in the Six Rivers National Forest. That's in Humboldt County. But since then, it's moved sort of into the Klamath National Forest in Siskiyou County. And as of this morning, it's over 10,000 acres, which is a pretty big jump. It was only just around 3,000 acres earlier this week. So it's growing very fast. There's zero containment so far as of this morning. And it's sent this pretty big, impressive smoke plume over the region, which if you go to social media, you can see a lot of photos of that. People on the coast were taking photos and posting that.
You talked with someone from the incident management team for the fire this week. What did they say about conditions in the Six Rivers and Klamath National Forests where it's burning?
So the fire started in a drainage of the Boise Creek, and it was described to me as a very fuel-rich area. Someone from the incident management team says parts of that area where the fire started actually haven't burned in the last 100 years. So there's a lot of timber buildup. Also, fuels treatment in the area has been limited because of the terrain. These drainages are very steep and sometimes hard to access. So that's also contributed to this buildup of fuels. Right now, there's over 600 people working to contain the fire. But they've also dealt with the occasional weather inversion. That's when cold air is trapped under a warmer layer, and that kind of keeps smoke low to the ground, which limits visibility and limits air support. So they're trying to fight it right now, but they're dealing kind of with these issues.
Okay. Thanks so much. We will continue to follow this fire. That's going to do it for the debrief. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. You can find that on our website at igpr.org. And you can find this program and more on our website at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms.